Falcon Cast Podcast, the ultimate podcast for the ultimate fan. Now, here's AtlantaFalcons.com's own Jay Adams and Daniel Cox.
Falcons fans, welcome back to another edition of the Falcon Cast Podcast here on AtlantaFalcons.com. Jay Adams to my far left
is far.
Daniel Cox. We got this brand new table here on the Falcon Cast Podcast. We told you it was coming, and here it is.
Yeah, there's changes every week, Jay.
Changes every week.
I feel so far away from you.
I know, and honestly, I'm all right with that.
Yeah, I know. We spend a lot of time in close quarters.
Exactly, and the table that we had the last time, well, I mean, it was like a table that was on stools.
Yes.
So if either one of us moved, it was it could have been trouble.
Yeah.
So it's nice to have a little bit of personal space. I like you a lot.
Absolutely.
This personal space is very nice.
It is.
I'm very comfortable. I will have you know.
That's good.
And so.
It's a good way
I'm
to start.
Ready to rock.
It's a good way to start. Yeah, well,
ready to rock it out.
Let's rock. Let's
All
do
right.
that.
Well, the Falcons, obviously, we saw improved to 2-4 on the season after a 31-23 win over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on Sunday. And, you know, it's nice to get that win again, huh?
Winning feels good.
It makes everything better, doesn't
it? It does, man. It changes that drive into work on Monday morning.
Yeah.
It's such a different experience. Even, like, traffic, just driving in traffic, just everyone on the road together just felt like winners.
Yeah, I
felt like winners on 85.
I flipped off significantly fewer people on my Monday commute. So, it does. It changes everything.
Yeah, and it's a good feeling.
It's a great feeling. It's a great feeling. And ever since, you know, it's been a busy week here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Been a very busy week. Mm-hmm. Tuesday we had the hometown huddle.
Hometown huddle,
which is if you don't know, is a community initiative that is NFL wide,
mm-hmm.
and the Falcons involved their entire roster of players out in the community to do some good work, give back a little bit, and you were a part of that.
Absolutely, I was.
And so we got a little photograph of you yesterday why don't you explain where
okay,
you were
sure.
and what was going on?
Well, I got, and this is the last couple of years, you know, in Hometown Huddle, you know, there's 13 different locations. They go to schools, they do a number of different things, and this is in the last couple of years, I've gone out to elementary school locations. And that's always fun, but it was a little bit different for me yesterday because we went to Open Hand, which is a kind of a community kitchen and donation center where they cook nutritional food and they deliver it to homebound and chronically ill citizens in the Atlanta community. So that's cool, but essentially what it is, it's a kitchen. It's a working kitchen. So we had the rookie club. There's, what, 16, something like that. I don't know how many.
Yeah, somewhere around there. Yeah.
All these guys, and they walk in, and these are young guys, rookies, obviously. And they had an idea what they were going to do, and we walk into this room, and they kind of introduce, you know, what Open Hand is and what they're going to do. And the lady that was in charge was so funny. She's like, and, you know, because we're a working kitchen, we all have to wear hairnets, so she started handing out all the hairnets, and everyone's like, whatever. And she's like, and also for you guys that, you know, have facial hair, we have to wear beard nets, and so handing out the beard nets. And, you know, these guys are like, whatever. And then it's like, we also have aprons that, you know, you have to wear. She just kept bringing out stuff. And she wasn't even done with that. And this is the first time I've ever seen this. She said, and, you know, because many of you guys have a lot of hair on your arms. Yeah. This is how I ended up. But they had to wear blue sleeves. So I took a photo of myself wearing a hairnet and a beard net. I figured you just kind of have to go with it, you know.
How did surgery go, doctor? Is everything good?
Everything went very well. Very well.
Yeah.
First time I've worn a hairnet in a while.
You know, this is a good look for you.
You think?
I think you should probably podcast a little bit more in hairnets.
Hmm.
Possibly because I don't like seeing your stray hairs get all over the
table. Oh, is that what it is? Okay.
So, but it's a good look for you.
Yeah.
It's a good look for you. Have you ever had a job where you've had to wear something like this?
I have, actually.
What's that?
I worked in a peanut butter factory in the summers for about 2 years when I was in high school.
Of course you did.
I did, man. Peanuts.
What did you do?
It wasn't anything glamorous. I can tell you
that. You don't say.
Essentially, I worked at the end of, like, it was like a, it wasn't an assembly line, but it was like, you know, like that, like a conveyor belt.
Yeah.
These cans of peanut butter would come down the line, and one individual would pop the lid on them. Like, they were sealed with the metal lid.
Yeah.
And then you put a plastic lid on top. And
you were a lid screwer.
No. I just packed boxes. I just put,
oh, you hadn't worked your way up.
Put it in the box.
To the lid screwer. Yeah.
You were... Put it in the box and push it through this machine that would tape the top and the bottom and go on off to somewhere else, and they'd stack them and stuff. My friend and I, one of my buddies in high school, we worked that job together for about, it was about 10 hours a day, something like that.
How long? How
like, all summer.
Okay. Whole summer?
Yeah.
Heck of a way to spend a summer.
I know. It's a lot of... listening to the radio, we would make tapes. This is back in the day.
Yeah, tapes.
Cassette tapes.
Do we remember what cassette tapes? We have interns in the room that may not understand what cassette tapes are.
We'll explain to Dylan and Maurice what those are later. But we would kind of like time, you know, and we had 90-minute tapes, not 60 minutes. So you can kind of like keep track of the hours of the day based on how many times you're flipping the tape.
That's true. I had a pretty weird job, probably my weirdest job. It did not involve hair nets and beard nets or anything, anything like that. No weird get-ups.
I wonder if you would be required to wear a hair net.
Yeah, probably. I would definitely have the beard net.
Yes.
Even though I keep myself groomed, I would probably have to still wear something on my head, even though there's not a whole lot of hair to speak of.
Yeah.
But I had a weird job. I spent a winter. It was just about a winter where I worked at a mall kiosk.
Oh, wow.
And at the kiosk, it was a necklace kiosk.
Okay.
And there were all different kinds of necklaces. And if you were a customer, you would come up and you would choose what kind of necklace you want. Okay. But the necklace had like this little vial on the end of it. Mm. So it was like all designed around this little vial. And in the vial, I would put oil. There's like this little oil. Okay. Put in there, but also
are you making potions?
No, not a potion. Just like you know, just regular old. I don't know. I can't remember. It was like baby oil or something like that. But in the oil, you would put a grain of rice, one single grain of rice. But I would write something on the grain of rice at their request. So that was my job. Is I would write on a grain of rice, and we all know a grain of rice is
pretty
very
small,
very small thing.
Pretty small.
So I would have a little specialized pen and a big old magnifying glass I would work under, and I would just sit there and I'd, you know, write out Daniel on a grain of rice. I'd put it in the oil, plug that thing up with a cork, and you got yourself a necklace. That's what I did. There are people still probably walking around with my handwriting around their neck.
I'm sure. It's treasured possessions.
I mean, yeah.
You must have a steady hand.
You know, it's gotten worse over the years, but back then it was pretty good.
How old were you then?
I did that when I was like 18, 19 years old. So, but look.
Oh, wow.
Look at us now.
Hey, yeah.
Right? Right?
Yeah, hey, you got it.
Yeah. But I seriously did have a guy who came in and he wanted, I don't think he quite understood how the process worked. And he wanted an entire Bible verse written on one grain of rice. And I had to kind of explain to him what a grain of rice was big it was and how you probably couldn't fit four lines of text on it. So that was
It's going to cost you, sir.
Multiple
grains of rice.
Exactly. So we found a compromise. But
Very interesting.
Yeah, that's, hey, you know, makes you thankful for what you got today, huh?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've run the gamut of odd jobs. But, yeah, I had a flashback yesterday when she broke out the hair nets, the beard nets and everything. I was like, wow, this takes me back.
Yeah.
It's been a long time.
I heard that Malachi Goodman, they did not have plastic gloves that were big enough for his paws.
No, they did not. He put, you know, he's handing out gloves to everyone, and he started to put them on, and he was like, and just like his fingers just ripped the gloves apart. And she's like, that's the largest pair I have. I don't know what to do. So they had him set up with something else. He was very hygienic. He washed his hands numerous times. And he wasn't handling food, but he was doing something else that would allow him to work, you know, that morning. But he did not have gloves on because they didn't fit.
Amazing.
I know.
That's a good problem. Good problem to have if you're a defensive end.
For him, yes.
Trying to...
it works for him.
To create some separation, which he did.
Yeah, he
did. And he had a nice game. Nice little game.
We might mention that later.
Yeah, we might go ahead and do that. Yeah, so foreshadowing. Let's go and do some football stuff.
Yeah, let's talk about
that. There's a little bit of football going on. So big matchup with Arizona Union. You may not think of it that way. Traditionally, I think you've seen in recent years that Arizona has kind of struggled to find their quarterback. Mm-hmm. And of course, they've got Carson Palmer now, who's in there doing his job. But they're a pretty good defense down in Arizona that the Falcons will have to contend with.
Yeah,
and so we've got three potential game changers here for Arizona that we've come up with, and one of them being Patrick Peterson,
right? And he's got three interceptions. And you talk about that defense, and we may not recall it last year, or we don't. I don't know if we think back to last season. I'd honestly forgotten about it until I heard about it this morning. But you know, we recall that we played the Falcons, or I'm sorry, we played the Cardinals last season.
Yeah,
and that was the five interception game.
Yes,
five turnovers.
Yeah,
which is unheard of to do that in a game and then go on to win. So, Patrick Peterson, I don't recall if he was one of those guys last season that got one of those, but. He is a dangerous football player.
Sure.
He is a cornerback, and Matt was talking about him on Wednesday in the locker room. He said he's a man kind of guy, and he has traditionally, this season at least, he's matched up against that number one option. So he's looking to take that guy away, and he's becoming more and more successful at it. He's got three interceptions on the season. He's leading a secondary that's specializing in taking that ball away. They got eight interceptions on the year. So he's one of those guys you got to look out for.
Sure. And, you talk about taking away the number one guy. And, as of right now, we don't really know what's going on with Ryan White. That may come out between now and Sunday, and it could come before you even see the podcast
here. Yeah, really. But
who knows what's going to happen with Roddy White. And if you talk about putting Harry Douglas on a guy like Patrick Peterson, suddenly that becomes a very intriguing matchup.
Right.
And I think, we saw that a lot of people underrate Harry Douglas and the things that he can do.
Mm-hmm.
And he certainly had a heck of a game against Tampa Bay. And against a very good secondary too.
Yeah, and Harry was lined up not all the time, but he was lined across from Revis a couple of times, and he won some of those matchups. So it was a really encouraging day from that that standpoint as well for Harry.
So whoever that number one option ends up being, I still like the matchup.
Yeah,
whether it's him or whether it's Roddy or whether it's Harry. I think it's still going to be a good matchup, but definitely something to watch for. Here's the other thing is that Arizona has forced and recovered seven fumbles. Yeah. Easy for me to say. But, when you've got that defensive ability to knock the ball out of a team's hands, I mean, you can kill momentum with a swat right there.
Right. Yeah, and that's a turnover a game, basically, that the Cardinals are forcing. And that's a huge stat, and that's extra possessions for that offense. And this is an offense that is up and down, has had some troubles. They don't quite have the playmakers that they'd like to have, but they have a guy like Larry Fitzgerald who can do just about anything on the football field. You give those Carson Palmer's a veteran, he's an experienced quarterback. If you give those guys repeated opportunities, they're going to hurt you. And That's that. When I heard it, it just jumped out at me. That says a defense that swarms through the ball.
Yeah, and then we got to talk about third downs here. Arizona's offense is converting 31% on third down this year. Falcons defense is allowing 45.7% on third down this year. So a pretty interesting statistic right there.
Yeah, it says that's an offense that's struggling.
Mm-hmm.
But it also says, and we know about the Falcons' defense, they haven't played up to their capabilities either. I know they're not pleased with how consistently they've played over the course of the season. They had a really good week last week. That was a nice bounce back for them. But that's really going to be the key: is can the Falcons stop this so-so offense on third downs? And if they can do that, I think that's probably going to be the deciding factor. It was some other word I was thinking.
The coup de grace.
There you go.
Throw a little, what is that, French? I don't know.
I have no idea.
Yeah, I'm not good at other languages. You pointed it out that the Bucks had had some trouble against the Falcons defense for part of the game on third downs. You got towards the end of the game there, and you saw that the Bucks went on that, what was it, 18 play drive that took up about almost 9 minutes. I mean, that's the stuff that you got to get off the field for. Yeah. Now, to the defense's credit, you held them to 3 on that drive.
Absolutely.
Which is huge. However, to be in that situation, and then you're not only giving up third downs, but you're giving up fourth downs.
Yeah. And points are going to be at a premium against a defense like the Cardinals.
Sure.
So, you know, you got to get them off the field and get the Falcons offense the ball. You know, we talk about third downs. The Falcons are, and this might surprise some people, are fifth in the league in third down conversion percentage. So it's one of those things. The Falcons are pretty decent at it on offense, so they've got to get it on the field.
Yeah, absolutely. So those are our three things, and that takes us right into our stat of the week.
Oh, nice. That's so
– we're throwing out numbers and figures, and now we're going to the stat of the week.
Stat of the week.
All right, so here's what we dug up here. Arizona has been outscored 93-54 in the first half of games this season, okay? They've outscored their opponents 79-68 in the second half. The Falcons have outscored their opponents 88-63 in the first half this season, 41-3 in the first quarter, as a matter of fact, and have been outscored 94-65 in the second half. So is this truly a game of a first-half team versus a second-half team?
If you look at those statistics, those numbers, kind of say it is a little bit.
But I have some things that those numbers may not be 100% telling of what the two teams have done.
Okay.
So the Falcons are plus 20. When you compare the Falcons and the Cardinals and what they've done and points they've scored, the Falcons are plus 28 in the first half. Okay. Cardinals are plus 14 in the second half.
Yeah.
Okay. But Falcons hold the overall lead at 153-133 in total points scored this year.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this gets to the point of that the Falcons having that might as well be copyrighted third quarter lull.
Yeah. It's frustrating.
Sure.
It leaves me without words sometimes. Because there's so many of these things that it's like we hear that and we know that stat now, and we've known this for a while, a couple of seasons. They've had this reoccurring issue.
It's like I've said to you and Dan Levack in the press box sometimes, it's halftime is sometimes the worst thing that can happen to the Falcons in a game.
I know.
Because you come out after halftime and you just continually experience the same kind of issues. But the positive side of that is that you end up picking up things in the fourth quarter because the Falcons have played very good in the fourth quarter this year.
But in that first half, that first quarter, 41-3, the Falcons are outscoring their opponents is really, another one of those keys, if you will. If they can come out and kind of establish something. And I think if the defense could just do something like they did last week, where they maybe force a turnover, get a little momentum, ignite a little bit, that could make all the difference in the world. Because you know the Falcons are going to score their points. At this point, I think we feel like just about any defense, it doesn't really matter. The Falcons can get the points that they need, and if they could get them first thing right out of the bat, I think that's going to be. Make for a really, really positive day, especially in Arizona.
It helps you ride out the storm, you know? Because we hear Coach Smith talk about how there's ebbs and flows to every single game, and that's one of the things that you allow yourself to build in that little bit of comfort. So, you know, I know a lot of fans are frustrated by, you know, the situation where you get up 24-10 at halftime, and then you come out and you give up a score, and suddenly it's a one-score game, and you feel like, oh, well, here we go again. I think being able to come out and put up points in the first quarter goes a long way towards being able to ride out some of those ebbs and flows. And yeah. It's just like, okay, so let's talk about basketball real quick. Mm-hmm. You know I'm no basketball expert.
Right, right.
But I know that basketball is a game of runs. Mm-hmm. And that you're going to have teams that go on like 21 to 2 runs at certain points. And basketball coaches talk all the time about how you've got to be able to ride out those those runs and kind of stay with it. And I feel like this is kind of in the same vein, is that you're able to get those points up. And when the tide does turn, because invariably it's always going to in a football game, okay, you're able to kind of ride it out.
Yeah. And that's all we've been saying, I think, out of this team all year is no one's looking. I mean, everyone would love to have a top five Falcons defense.
Sure.
In the league. You're going to be competitive every week. I think that if the Falcons can just – have a ranked number 15 and a couple of stats. You know what I mean? If they can just kind of be in the middle of the pack a little bit, keep the Falcons in games, the Falcons offense can do the rest.
Sure.
And I feel like we're going to start to see some of that. Because last week, I think, was kind of a little bit of a revelation for the defense, I think. I asked Thomas Dekou point blank this morning. I was like, you guys, I think you would admit that, you know, William Moore and yourself – you haven't really played like Pro Bowl safeties this year. And then I ducked. But
yes, well, as you should.
But he said, you know, you're right. And we felt like, you know, heading into this game, we felt like, you know, when we have been able to make a big play on the back end, we feel like we've been a spark for the team. And we felt like we needed to do that. And we felt like the team has played well, especially the defense has played well when we do those things. And I think a little bit of that, and I don't think it sounds like I'm saying, you know, Thomas Dekou and William Moore, they needed to make a play so that they know they can make more. You know, it's not like that, but I think sometimes those things just have to happen.
Sure.
It's just kind of how it happens on the field.
Well, because when you lose a leader like Sean Weatherspoon.
Yeah.
Okay, for
and Corey Bierman even. Just like a guy, an energy Bierman. Guy like that.
Right, because these positions that you traditionally look to provide that leader for you aren't there. So now you've got to look back and you've got to go all the way to the safety position and say, all right, you two guys, we're going to feed off of you two guys.
Yeah.
And I think they're starting to realize that because I talked to both of them about that after the game.
Yeah.
Because you noticed a significant difference in this defense when those two really stepped up and took hold of it.
Absolutely.
So I think there's a lot to that.
And how much do you think the whole Coach Nolan thing being on the sidelines?
I mean, it worked, didn't it?
Yeah, absolutely it worked.
I don't know too much about how you react as a player.
Yeah.
When you have your coordinator down there. I do know that in noticing that Nolan was on the sideline, watching him every now and again, he was constantly engaged with one of his players.
Yeah.
Constantly. As long as, you know, the unit wasn't out on the field.
Right.
You know, he's talking, he's finding out from those guys what's going on. I think there's a lot that you can do because when you're on the headset,
yeah,
you're talking to like maybe one of your assistants or you're talking to Smitty or, you know, and mm-hmm. there's a lot that's going on. You're not getting the full picture of what your defense is seeing and what they're saying and things like that. That's just my guess. I don't know if that's 100% true or not. But to me, it seems like you would be able to get a little bit more out of being on the sidelines. And it's something that Nolan's done both, you know, throughout his 21 or 22 year career now.
Yeah.
He's been up in the press box. He's been on the sideline. This is not something that's like brand new for him.
Right.
But we saw in previous years, Brian Van Gorder mm-hmm. preferred to coach from the sideline.
Right.
So I think it all depends on preference, but I think it obviously had an effect on the players.
It seems like it made an effect on the younger guys.
Sure.
I think having that voice, because I know they have a ton of respect for Coach Nolan, and I know they believe in the system. But sometimes you just need that extra – you need that voice, you know. You need that crazed look – and the crazy guy looking at you that's telling you what's about to happen. And, you know, sometimes that helps, you know. And I think some of those young guys, I think they may have benefited from that. So I'm pretty confident we'll see that again.
It's probably
moving forward. That's going to be the
– it would surprise me if he was back up in the press box
absolutely.
After that.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. Hey, You want to play Which Is Better?
Yes, let's do that.
All right, which let's is play better. A little bit. Which Is Better?
Which Is Better?
So we got two plays here, two yep. very good plays, uh-huh. and we're going to start out. Here is the first option, up for bids. William Moore's sack strip, Thomas DeCou's touchdown return. What a play here in the first quarter. Yeah. We saw that all-out blitz come in. William Moore gets in there, knocks the ball loose. I think Jonathan Massaquoi had a nice little hockey hip check there.
You got a Paul in there.
Yeah. And
oh, yeah, and then you got that.
DeCou picks it up, goes off to the races, and that's seven quick points for the Falcons on that play. Against, let's see here, Jaquizz Rodgers comes up with that 8-yard run. We're still on the on the defensive play here, but we see William Moore come in there, gets right through, and here's that quiz run. Jaquizz Rodgers, 8-yard touchdown run, and he just breaks the ankles of Mark Barron here.
Yeah.
I want to know how he even caught that in the middle of mess of humanity there.
He called it a tight squeeze. It was a tight squeeze. Fit.
I called him Jaquizz Houdini
after that because that it was play looked magical. Dead. It looked dead.
Yeah.
I remember sitting there and we're like, oh, no. And you saw the traffic around Matt and the pockets closing. And next thing you know, all of a sudden, you're like, what is he doing? And he flips it.
Yeah.
And next, and Quiz is just shooting out there.
I mean, watch this. Watch this little area that he has. And then boom.
But watch this. Boom. Oh, who was that? That was Mark Barron.
Yep.
First round safety.
Yes. Pick up your jock strap at the door, sir, because
it's like he was trying to tackle a ghost. I mean,
that's how Quiz
and,
is.
And that's what I love about Jaquizz. And I tweeted this out. It's might be hyperbole a little bit, but, you know, Jaquizz Rodgers.
You're all about hyperbole on this show.
The Jaquizz Rodgers, yes or no, best juke move in the NFC South, NFC, NFL?
I would definitely put him up against anybody on the team.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Because he's done that a number of times now.
Darren Sproles is kind of the same way. His ability, Jaquizz Rodgers' ability to stop
mm-hmm.
and move all in a split second, the blink of an eye, is what's really so impressive about him.
Yeah.
And I'd put him up against, I'd say, pretty much anyone in the league as far as just the ability to switch on a dime and mm-hmm. to move and to get a defender thinking you're going one way.
Yeah.
But the other side of him is he's so tough.
Yeah.
That if you engage with him, he's going to fight you for every single yard that he gets.
You can ask Earl Thomas about that.
Yeah, he probably has nightmares about that still. So, which is better?
Which is better?
We are awfully on top of this Jaquizz Rodgers run here. Is that? Do we both agree that this is better, or where are we at? Where's your head at?
My head is. I'm going to go with Willie Moe, Thomas DeCou.
Wow, play. Okay.
Just because it happened on the third play of the game, or third play of the Tampa series in the first quarter. It was just such a huge moment, and the Falcons defense needed they needed that so bad, so much. And they needed, like we were saying earlier, we were just talking about it, they needed those two guys to make a play.
Yeah.
And Willie Moe came in. I mean, Coach Nolan drew it up. He gave so much credit to Coach Nolan for that, for, you know, putting him in that position. He gets through there, and oh man, I just love it. And then it's a defensive touchdown. I'm sure Coach Smith has a great stat about how many times you win when you score a defensive touchdown.
I'm sure he does. I like that play as well. I'm gonna go with Jaquizz's touchdown though, just for, again, you know, you've seen me kind of lean this way in the past because I admire the beauty of football sometimes.
Absolutely.
And I think this is one of those plays where, you know, Matt's in trouble, and I mean, just his presence of mind to be able to see this running back who may be 5'6" in this mass of humanity and dump that ball off, and for Quiz to then turn around, get upfield, go one-on-one with a defender, stare him down, and make that move into the end zone. I thought it was just – I could watch that play over and over and over again because of just how pretty it ended up being executed. And whether – you know, it looks like it was one of those plays that was kind of drawn up that way to be kind of like that middle – middle screen, middle maybe shovel pass was the intention, but just how that play all turned out, that was it for me.
And that was the moment wise. That was fourth quarter, put them up 31-17.
And you talk about building confidence. I mean, for a team that has struggled as much as they have in the red zone, I mean, how important is that to get another red zone touchdown?
Yeah, that was two of three, I think.
Yeah.
Like that.
So I mean that was another confidence builder for me. Yeah. So we'll disagree on this, but I honestly think you could flip a coin on these two plays. They're beautiful plays, both.
Absolutely. I mean, and no disrespect to Drew Davis.
Oh, that was an amazing play.
And some of the things Harry did on the field. But just from a single play standpoint, I felt like those two plays were like, you know, just such pivotal plays, but they were also really special plays in the grand scheme of the game.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
All right.
So we disagree.
We'll disagree. I am interested to see where we stand on this next topic, because as far as which is better topics go, this might be one of my favorites.
Yeah.
So we have this thing called the Publix tailgate team,
right?
Here at the Falcons, and this is a great initiative where we have a great group of young people who go out to different Publix locations around Georgia and even in the Southeast to go to different states. And visit, and sometimes players are a part of this, and they'll go out and sign autographs for a while and really get into the communities and see some people and visit with some people, and they have a lot of fun too. If they're ever in your area, I mean, go. It's a lot of fun. So anyways, there was a Publix tailgate team event last night. Tuesday night in Villarica, Georgia. And do you know where – have you been to Villarica before?
If I have, I wasn't aware of it.
Okay. Well, it's a nice little place out you kind of get on 20 and, like, you're going towards Alabama.
Okay.
Out that way. And Akeem Dent was out there signing some autographs for some folks. And
sounds like a completely ordinary night.
Completely ordinary night, you know, until this one particular fan shows up and has something for Akeem Dent to sign. And so I talked to Akeem about this in the locker room today, and I said, can you kind of tell me the story behind this? And he said, yeah. So this kid walked in, and he kind of was walking with his hands behind his back, and he had something, and he walks right up to me, and he says, will you sign this? And here's what he had to sign.
That looks like a squirrel.
Daniel, I will tell you, in fact, that is a squirrel. And
it's not alive, though, is it?
It is. He has gone on to squirrel heaven.
Okay.
Akeem told me that the kid himself actually shot the squirrel and ended its existence with a BB gun, and then took it and got it stuffed. It's taxidermy, which I guess is it's an art form.
Yes.
And it's on like a little piece of wood, so it looks very natural.
Right.
So as you can see down in that corner there by the tag near the squirrel's head, that is Akeem Dent's signature. Akeem Dent signed a stuffed squirrel.
Yeah, that's
last night.
That's
Tuesday night.
Is that the first time or even the strangest, most unusual
thing
Akeem's ever?
I asked him flat out. I said, is that among the strangest things that you've ever had to sign? He said, that was the strangest thing I've ever had to sign. So that right there, if you ever meet Akeem, that's the bar you've got to reach.
Yeah.
I've
seen Akeem sign some dude's shoulders and chest and stuff like that.
Yes,
Grill
with the Falcons. Yeah,
but
there were body parts being signed there. Yes. But this is a taxidermic squirrel. And I asked him, was there any rhyme or reason as to why the squirrel? Like, I understand that he's like a he's from Georgia. He played for the Bulldogs. So if like somebody had like a little stuffed, not taxidermic, but stuffed like bulldog or something.
Oh, yes.
Oh yeah,
okay.
Sign. Sure. I get that. Squirrel is like, although I will say that when it comes to original memorabilia, I mean, it doesn't get much better than an autographed stuffed squirrel.
Absolutely. I mean, this is something that this kid probably values greatly. And he expects to carry with him for the rest of his life.
Let me tell you something about this squirrel. It is officially one of a kind.
Absolutely.
It's a one of a kind squirrel.
This is true.
So this is our first contender here.
This is the segment called Which is Better.
Which is Better. So we have a second one. We heard a story.
I can only imagine.
And I tried to confirm this with Sean Weatherspoon in the locker room today. and he had some vague memories of this, but wasn't 100%. But we're going to treat it like it was absolutely true, because we retweeted this story that last year, during a similar event, mm-hmm. Sean Weatherspoon was asked to autograph a rotisserie chicken.
Oh, wow.
A fresh, delicious rotisserie chicken. He was asked to sign. And it kind of struck me as funny when I talked to Spoon about it today, because he didn't have a whole lot of recollection. He's like, yeah, you know, that sounds right. I would think if I was ever asked to autograph a piece of poultry that I would remember such an occasion. So
I'm sure Akeem will remember signing a squirrel.
Oh, for his whole life. He will always remember that. But the rotisserie chicken. So I ask you, Daniel.
Okay.
Which is the better unique memorabilia item to own? A stuffed squirrel signed by Akeem Dent or a rotisserie chicken signed by Sean Weatherspoon?
I'm going to go with the Akeem Dent squirrel, just because it has a lifetime of memories. You know what I mean? Listen, there's the shelf life of a rotisserie chicken is short. So you're kind of wasting it, right? You're wasting your autograph. Because you're either going to eat it.
Well.
Or.
I mean, Sharpie ink is not the best thing for you. I mean.
Probably not, but.
Probably adds a little bit of flavoring, but probably not the best thing for your health. I'm with you here. I completely think the squirrel is the better item to get autographed, if nothing else, but for preservation purposes.
Right.
I mean, you're talking about an art form that is meant for preservation.
This is true.
You know, and you're talking about a rotisserie chicken that's right off the spit. Now, I honestly would prefer to eat the chicken, keep the signed squirrel.
Yeah.
So I can part with the autographed rotisserie chicken.
Yeah.
Although I question its deliciousness after it's been autographed.
True. True.
But I think that is, again, a one-of-a-kind conversation starter that I think you can cherish for a very long time.
I'm sure he will. The kid will.
I would like to have it. I actually had somebody ask me on Twitter yesterday. So if we see an autographed squirrel by Akeem Dent pop up on eBay, we can pretty much guarantee that it's authentic. I said, yeah, you can pretty much
probably
make that a safe bet that it is authentic. So,
I'm having some ideas here.
About?
I don't know. Just, you know, we don't ask for autographs.
Because we can't.
Right. But, you know, maybe some exceptions could be made if we had like an effort to have all the players on the team sign some sort of, it would have to be larger than a squirrel.
Yes.
Some sort of taxidermied animal.
You and I are going to go antique hunting.
Yes.
And we're going to go and we're going to see what taxidermic treasures we can find at some of these little, maybe we go up to Helen, Georgia, have a nice little afternoon up in Helen, Georgia.
That's a good idea. There's a shop right up the road, though. I'm sure we could find something up there.
And we could find something taxidermic that we could have our players sign.
I think that would be fantastic.
For the podcast set.
Yes. Let's do that.
I love that idea.
All right.
Let's make that happen. All right. Well, there you have it. That is this week's edition of Which is Better.
Which is Better.
All right. Well, let's do a little mini buy or sell. We've got one little mini buy or sell that we want to get out of the way here.
It's such a popular segment.
I mean, we would be remiss if we completely pass it up.
It has to happen each week.
All right, here is the topic for buy or sell, and we will keep it brief. We know that everybody has suppers to eat, and you got a little mug there.
I do. It's an edible arrangements mug.
Oh, those things are delicious.
Yes, they are.
My mug says, my friends went to Georgia, and all they bought me was this lousy mug. But I don't think the mug is lousy. I think the mug is actually very nice.
I wonder what it says about the mug that it stayed in Georgia.
Whoa, man. You just totally blew my mind with that. That's like Googling Google. Break the internet. Okay, so week 7 was a turning point in the season for the rookies. Do you buy or sell that?
I buy that.
Do tell.
You know, we heard Coach Smith in the days and practices leading up to last Sunday's game, mentioned that, you know, over the bye week, they considered everything on the table. And he kind of hinted that some younger players would get more time or maybe have some more opportunities on the field, in this coming game last week. So against the Bucks, and that's what we saw. We saw an 8-man defensive line rotation that included guys like Malachi Goodman, Stanley Mapanga, players that had been on the field for some snaps, but hadn't seen anywhere near the snaps they saw. I don't remember what the percentages were now.
I have them.
Of course you do.
Of course I do.
What might they be, Jay?
Malachi Goodman had 42% of the snaps,
okay.
Defensive snaps. Stanley Mapanga had 25%. And how about this? The starter, Jonathan Massaquoi, had 20%. But when you talk about this defensive line rotation, you don't look at it as having only 20% of the snaps is a bad thing.
Yeah.
Because your role is to be a situational guy.
Exactly.
In this week's game plan. Now, you could come out next week and see Massaquoi put up 42% of the snaps, mm-hmm. and Goodman have 20.
Yeah.
So that's just the way things go with this defense.
We saw that type of rotation. We saw some increased snap counts. We saw a guy like Zeke Monaghan on the field in a mm-hmm. goal line situation as a safety. We saw Robert Alford on the field a little bit more on the outside corner opposite Asante when they went to three corners. Robert Alford slid out to the outside or came onto the field on the outside, and Desmond Trufant slipped into the slot role. And I really feel like that was if it wasn't a turning point for the entire group of rookies, not the entire group, but, some of those key guys, I think it was a turning point for Trufant.
Sure.
He had a really nice game. And, he didn't have an interception, and I don't know what his stats are off the top of my head.
You know who's got him?
Let me see.
I do. He had 7 tackles, a forced fumble, a pass breakup, and almost had a sack.
That's a pretty good game.
Good game for a rookie.
Yeah. That fumble was recovered by Arizona, but that's heads up play.
Tampa, you're doing the same. I've been doing this all week. For some reason.
Well, that's a good thing. I think we're
bringing the good karma.
Yeah.
To the next game.
Yeah, and we're not looking too much to the past. We're already on Arizona.
Right.
But anyway.
Right.
But
I agree. I'm going to go ahead and buy this as well. And speaking specifically to Trufant, and I mentioned that he almost had a sack, I saw a couple of times where he was sent on the cornerback blitz from the nickel position.
Right.
And he was in the backfield. I mean, he was really causing some disruption there. And whether it was him that was almost getting to the quarterback or whether it was him taking up a blocker so somebody else could get there, he certainly did a lot. And as far as Goodman goes, I mean, I've been on his bandwagon for a while here, and I truly think that this is going to be a very good prospect for the Falcons in the future. And I think that this is just the start, but certainly a turning point. Because look, this is a youth movement right now, and the Falcons have embraced that. Injuries have caused this to be a young defense,
mm-hmm. right?
And so I really feel like getting this win and holding off the Bucks and doing all the things that they did in Sunday's game adds confidence. And you talk about confidence as it's one of those intangible things that you can't really grasp or get a hold of. But this is one of those things that can help this team and this defense, these young guys, progress even further.
Yeah. You got me.
Sorry.
I got nothing to say.
You've always got something to say.
Oops, oops, oops.
You've always got something to say.
No, I think you've said it. I buy that statement. I really do.
So you're buying my statement that buys this statement.
Yeah, yeah. It's
we're off the charts.
Double buy there. And I was proud of those guys. And you know what? And this, you don't hate me for saying this.
I would never hate you.
But Malachi Goodman got a late hit penalty.
Sure.
And we don't want penalties.
And so did Mapanga.
Yeah, exactly. But you know what? I can live with that.
Sure.
I'm not going to – I know Coach Smith isn't going to like that, and I wouldn't say that to him. Sorry about that, Coach Smith. But I can kind of live with that because I like that aggression. I like that he's getting there. To get there.
And you saw Alford had a pass interference penalty where he was being a little too aggressive. And I've said this a million times. It's just – Alford's that physical kind of cornerback, and I think it suits him really well. It's just going to take him a little while to find that line.
Yeah.
So
he's a young guy, but he's got that gambler in him.
Yeah.
He's got a little bit of that Asante in him, and I know he's
confident.
Looks up.
He's very confident.
Looks up to Asante.
So Yeah, I think all good things from these rookies, and it's great to see them all contributing at this point and putting together some solid football. Obviously, you know, the next game is just as important as the last one, so
absolutely,
we'll see how they progress. It's definitely something we'll keep an eye on.
Yeah, they got to string two together.
All right, well, let's get on to the most valuable Falcon, and this is our projection for who will be the most important Falcon in the upcoming game. And let me remind you of last week. Last week, I picked Tony Gonzalez in a haiku that will go down in the history of haikus.
Yes.
But Tony came up with two catches for 30 yards. Good job, good effort.
Yes.
All right.
Good job, good effort.
Daniel picked Asante Samuel, five tackles, one pass defense.
Yeah.
So now, I don't know how to call this one,
Daniel. I think it's a wash, Jay. I just...
You led 3-2 coming into the week.
Yes.
Do we go 3-2-1 and just call it a tie? Rules here. Should we have a shootout? Perhaps a thumb wrestling match? No, that's
not. No, just do that. Well, a thumb wrestling match? Wait a second. You seriously?
To see who wins?
You just challenged me to a thumb wrestling match?
I mean,
you don't know much about me, Jay. You really want to? Do you want to go there?
You have just intimidated me into not having a thumbnail.
Then I win. I'm going to take that win and take it for.
Is that right?
You conceded. I'm like, hey, we can do this.
All right, you can take it. All right,
really?
4-2. I'll let you take it.
No. I think if that's how it was going to be, we should put it as a tie.
Okay, so 3-2-1. That's where we stand right now.
Okay.
Three wins for you, two wins for me, one tie.
Win. Yeah.
And, you know, we brought up the idea of, you know, for our next one, using some kind of literary phrasing.
Yes.
To announce our picks. And I think we have decided this week on the always popular limerick.
Limerick, yes. A little old-fashioned.
I sat down today and wrote a limerick.
I know, man.
I'm at in my life.
Come on.
This is great for me.
Yeah.
But just so the people at home know, I mean, this is what I'm doing.
You could be doing many worse, like far less enjoyable, educational.
And let me tell you something. I'm so proud of my limerick.
I know you are.
That I'm going to go first.
Okay.
So do we know what a limerick is? Explain what a limerick is.
Limerick essentially is five stanzas. Right,
stanzas. Five lines. Yes, five lines. I don't know what a stanza is.
It follows the.
I know what a Costanza is. George Costanza.
It follows the rhyme scheme A A B B A.
Yeah.
So that means, you know, the first two lines, the final word rhyme.
Yes.
Words rhyme, and the fifth line rhymes with those first two lines.
Yes.
And then the second.
It's the old. Hey, listen, it's there once was a man from Nantucket that.
You keep saying that.
Have you not heard that limerick?
I don't think so.
It's am I? You guys? Anybody in the room? Anybody? Okay, Dylan. Dylan says yes. He's heard. He's heard of the man from Nantucket limerick.
Okay,
but that's the that's kind of where we're at right now.
All
right, this is where we're at. So, I have created a limerick for my most valuable Falcon this week, and I will begin.
Okay. Are you going to say who it is?
I will let you know who it is
in
my limerick. Are we ready?
Yes.
Okay, here is my limerick. There once was a man named HD who could move just as quick as a bee. The yards he does get as his hands are a net, and Jay wins over Daniel with glee.
Okay. So that's why you've been pushing that there once was a man from Nantucket. All right.
Let's hear your limerick.
Nice job. Yeah, that's good. So your player is Harry Douglas.
Harry Douglas is my guy.
That's a nice pick after, you know, last week.
Yep.
All right.
So let's hear what you've got planned.
I wrote it down. Okay. In 2010, you torched the Cards for 129 yards, making their D collapse like a house of cards. Compelling Snelling is always there. That day, two on the ground, one in the air. Deadlier than a mad dog's tooth, to quote the bard. That's a Shakespeare reference, if you didn't know. Jason Snelling, the way I see it, Quiz and Snelling are going to flip-flop each week, just you know, making plays. So this is Snelling's week.
All right. Well, there you have it. Who knew that you'd come to AtlantaFalcons.com and get a earload of limericks?
Limericks. What are we? It's next week, we got to raise the bar, man. Got to come up with something.
Yeah.
Iambic pentameter. I don't even know what that means, but...
I do, but potentially iambic pentameter. Okay. I'm leaning more towards interpretive dance, just for you.
Oh, God.
Just for you.
You've not let that go.
I won't. It'll happen.
Get ribbons and stuff, too? Can we make it like a...
Like Will Ferrell in Old School. Like, that's how we're going to do it.
Can we do it on the field? We can go out there. No, because
there's people out there.
There's a practice going on. That would get both of us.
Well, anyways, there you have it. There's the most valuable Falcon in limerick form. Where else are you going to get that kind of content?
Yeah.
Nowhere.
Nowhere.
No. So this is where we really thank people for tuning in and then beg them to tune in next week.
Continuing to listen and watch.
Yeah. All right.
I don't know. When the Falcons are winning, we continue to do what we've been doing, right? I'm going to wear the same clothes on Sunday that I wore last Sunday.
Good. So you are going to sit at home on your couch in a brown suit, right?
Yep. Yeah, I'm going to take a picture of it.
You better tweet out that picture. I want to see you in front of your television.
All right.
Watching in your brown suit.
Sure thing. Sure thing.
Okay.
All right.
Good. Yep. All right. Well, until then,
yes.
we will see. But we'll catch up with everybody next week. Thanks for tuning in.